This is Diana Cordy with Book Talk. My guest is Nate Blakeslee. His newest book is American Wolf, a true story of survival and obsession in the West. Welcome to our program.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
You usually write about politics and the people it affects in your home state of Texas. That is your home state, right?
Yeah, born and raised.
Mm-hmm. Including your first book, Tulia. Why were you interested in telling the adventure story, a biography, really, of a Yellowstone wolf named 06?
Well, that's a fair question. The book takes place in Yellowstone, which is a long way from Austin, Texas, where I live. I was already very familiar with that part of the country. My friends and I used to go up there and get summer jobs in and around Yellowstone and in Jackson. And I just sort of fell in love with the place and was always looking for an excuse to get back up there. The genesis of this book was a wolf-watching class that I took. Yellowstone is the one place in the world you can reliably spot wolves from the roadside with a spotting scope. It's become a big pastime there. And when I had lived there or stayed there in the summers in the mid-90s, early 90s, there were no wolves there. I mean, it looked like a paradise to me, but I didn't realize there was this important part of the ecosystem was missing. And they were reintroduced in the mid-90s. And of course, I heard about it and kind of followed it from afar. But 2007 was the first time I got to see it for myself, and I was just amazed, just blown away by what you could see through the scope.
Who has the obsession referred to in your title?
Well, it could refer to any number of characters in the book. It most definitely refers to the main human character in the book. A lot of the characters in the books are wolves, of course. 06 is the nickname of the main wolf character. She was sort of the most famous wolf in Yellowstone. It refers definitely to Rick McIntyre. He's a park ranger who lives just outside the entrance to the park. He's like the park's wolf guru. He's in his mid-60s. He has been there every day since reintroduction. He famously never misses a day in the park, 15 years straight without missing a day, whether he was on the clock or off the clock. His daily routine was always the same. Get up about 4:30 in the morning, get to the park, follow the wolves with their radio collars. You know, he has one of those telemetry, handheld telemetry devices. Set up his scope and wait for the sun to come up and watch wolves all day. And whether he's on the clock or off the clock, he has done that. And while he's watching them, he takes notes on this little handheld recorder. And at the time I first met him, he had 15,000 single-spaced pages of notes on the wolves of Yellowstone, something like 5 million words. So he definitely is one of the people you could say is obsessed. But there's this entire subculture now that's grown up around wolf watching in the park. People who, you know, lots of people see wolves when they pass through on the way to Old Faithful or wherever else they're going in the park, and it's a great experience. But for some people, that one visit is just never enough, and they have to come back and come back and come back. And there is so much excitement about the reintroduction project itself, which was wildly successful, you know, from almost no wolves at all in the Northern Rockies in the mid-90s to 1,700 wolves there today. They've spread through much of their former range. And when people hear about that, they just get really excited. And then when they see a wolf for the first time through the scope, which is that was an amazing thing for me as a journalist to see, was hang out with the watchers and see someone see a wolf for the first time through the scope. And they never really think they're going to see it because the scopes are so powerful. Sometimes the wolves are a mile away, even 2 miles away, and you can't see anything, even with binoculars. And then they lean down and look through the scope, and they just the expression of delight. That, you know, it turns them into little kids. It turns middle-aged people into little kids, which was quite a thing to see. Yeah, I did. The book, hopefully, reads like a novel, like a nonfiction novel in which, in many chapters, the main characters are just the wolves.
Why is the issue of wolves so polarizing?
It was the idea that they ought to be brought back to sort of fix Yellowstone, to fix this ecological imbalance in Yellowstone. The science behind that was extremely sound. And 20 years on, we can say that it was a success. But the politics of it was, as you say, extremely polarizing, extremely controversial. The descendants of those same ranchers that helped hunt those wolves out of the Yellowstone area, they're all still there. They're running cattle and sheep, not in the park, of course, but around the park. A lot of them, incidentally, run on public land, on national forest land, where they have grazing leases and have for generations and generations. They knew if the wolves came back, they would lose stock. Then, too, elk hunting is big business up there. People come from all over the country, the world, to hunt elk. And they hunt that Yellowstone elk herd. They don't hunt it in the park. They hunt it during the winter when the herds are, which of course are migratory, come down out of that high, snowy, mountainous area that Yellowstone is, and into those valleys all around the park, and they provide some of the best elk hunting in the world. And if you're a guide that lives in one of those valleys, you can charge $5,000 to guide an elk hunt with these out-of-town, these well-heeled hunters from out-of-town. Or if you run a motel, a restaurant, you're relying on those hunters. And so they do everything they can to protect that hunting economy. And they knew that when the wolves came back, there would be fewer elk. In fact, that was the idea behind the reintroduction. And so they opposed it, too.
Do both sides have truth?
Well, we're not arguing so much about facts. We're arguing kind of about values. I mean, if you didn't support the public policy goal of reducing that elk herd, which, by the way, the rangers used to do themselves, after the wolves were gone and the elk population exploded, the rangers realized they had to do something. And the dirty secret of Yellowstone was that as soon as the visitors were gone in the winter, they herded those elk up and they shot them. They shot thousands of them every winter in order to protect the habitat for other species. But they were pressured to stop doing that by state legislators who knew that it was affecting the hunting economy around the park. And that's why the elk were allowed to just explode again. So if you were one of those hunters, you lived in that valley, and elk hunting is like a religion up there, you didn't share that policy goal of reducing that herd, and you're not going to celebrate its success. Now, with respect to the ranchers, in order to get the ranchers on board, or as on board as they ever would be, a huge concession was made at the time of reintroduction. These wolves, even though they were on the endangered species list, the cattle ranchers were allowed to shoot them if they preyed on livestock, or more precisely, call in a government trapper to shoot them. And hundreds, or by now thousands, have been shot under that rubric. So they sort of got what they wanted. There have been some losses, but they have not been as bad as feared. For example, the state of Wyoming, 230 cattle and sheep lost last year. There are 1.6 million cattle and sheep in the state of Wyoming. Tens of thousands are lost every year to disease and to bad weather, just to put into perspective what 230 means. Now, if they were all on the same ranch, obviously it would be an impact. But ranchers are compensated by the Wyoming state legislature. In fact, they're compensated 7 times the value of every animal lost. So the ranchers by now, 20 years in, have learned to accommodate themselves. What they're about now is learning to deal with the fact that the wolves are out there. They're tired of fighting about whether it was a good idea or not. But the hunting interests, and more crucially, the politicians, are very interested in keeping the issue alive, because it's become this wedge issue. It's become something you can run on. You can run on being anti-wolf now, just like you can run on being anti-gun control, anti-abortion. It's an issue you can use. There's a lot of people there who came there for the natural environment. There's a whole new set. They have a whole new sort of ethic when it comes to the land, sort of. And you have that kind of newcomers versus old Wyoming or old Montana dynamic that's going on too.
What do you hope readers get from your book?
Well, I hope that what was revelatory to me is revelatory to them as well. Part of the reason that I decided to make it a sort of narrative nonfiction instead of just like a book-length essay about wolves is that first of all, I want people to finish it, and a story goes a long way towards that. But the fact that it is a story, the story of one wolf, is part of the message of the book. If you're a game manager in a place like Wyoming, you spend every summer trying to figure out how many wolves you can afford to lose to hunters and trappers and culling on behalf of ranchers before the feds will step back in and take over, which is what you don't want to happen. And the number is always in the hundreds. And that's how they think, these sort of landscape scale, big numbers. But the book, I hope, invites readers to ask a different question, which is, what is the value of one wolf's life? And if every wolf's life is this amazing adventure story like O6's, and by the way, she was not unusual. The only thing unusual is that I had enough detail about her life to tell her story in the way that I did. But any wolf's life would be like O6's if you knew enough about it. So if every wolf's life is this amazing adventure story, then what gets lost when that story ends? And should that be figured into the calculus of, say, a Wyoming game manager when they're trying to calculate how many they can afford to lose? Should we think about it in an entirely different way?
Thank you. My guest is Nate Blakeslee, author of American Wolf, A True Story of Survival and Obsession in the West, published by Crown. This is Diana Cordy with Book Talk.